Now we skip down to item number 18. The TMDL is for fecal coliform in the Lower Salinas River watershed.
Item 18 is actually a continuation of the hearing that we began at the March board meeting when the board had actually had a pretty good turnout, as opposed to today, apparently. Pretty good turnout for that item, with a lot of people commenting. A lot of people had commented in writing beforehand, and a lot of people showed up at the March board hearing with comments. And the board agreed with requests from some of the people who spoke at that hearing to provide more time, in part to meet with staff, time for additional comments with staff, discussion with staff, understanding of implications of the TMDL and that sort of thing. And while the formal comment period, as far as the written comments, is closed, anyone could still say anything today during this item as well. And if there is anyone here to speak to that, there's no need to repeat any of the information that's already been given to the board. And also, our staff presentation today will not repeat the detailed presentation that we had in March, but Pete Osmolowski of our staff will summarize where we are today and give you our recommendation.
I think Dr. Hunter has a question before we start.
Actually, I have a statement. I just wanted to state for the record that I did not attend the March meeting, but I did review the record and am prepared and able to participate in the hearing item today.
Thank you.
Okay. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, board members. This is agenda item number 18, proposed basin plan amendments for the Lower Salinas River watershed, which includes total maximum daily loads for fecal coliform and adding the watershed to two existing waste discharge prohibitions. My name is Pete Osmolowski. I'll be presenting the recommendation along with Chris Rose, our TMDL program manager. As Mr. Briggs indicated, this is a continuation of a hearing from the March board meeting. As such, we're providing an abbreviated presentation to brief you on what's happened since March and to recap some key information pertaining to the proposed basin plan amendments. You may recall that the TMDL project area is located in northern Monterey County. This map shows the project area. The bacteria-impaired stream reaches are shown in red. And to geographically orient you, three prominent urban landmarks are shown in yellow: the city of Salinas, the communities of Castroville and Gonzales. As I said, this agenda item was first presented for Water Board consideration at the March 18th meeting in Watsonville. At that time, the board decided to continue the hearing at a board meeting later in this year. Staff followed board's direction to allow stakeholders additional time to review the proposed basin plan amendments and to disseminate information to their constituencies. Also during this time, staff have been in contact with stakeholders, and we have repeatedly offered ourselves to them for additional discussions and outreach as necessary. These included our participation at a Central Coast Rangelands Coalition meeting in May and at a Monterey County Cattlemen's Association meeting in June. Also, there are several non-substantive changes made since the March board meeting to the Basin Plan Amendment package, which are summarized in Attachment 7 to the staff report. Finally, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, US EPA, has communicated their support for the adoption of the TMDL. US EPA has reviewed the proposed TMDL, and they have provisionally determined that it meets the requirements for EPA approval. Now, I'd like to segue into recapping for you some basic key information pertaining to these proposed basin plan amendments. Based on our source analysis, these are the source categories that are causing or contributing to stream impairments due to fecal indicator bacteria. Storm sewer system discharges, also known as MS4 entities, fecal waste from domestic animals, wildlife, illegal dumping, spills and leaks from sanitary sewer systems, and waste from homeless encampments.
Is that in any particular order, that last list?
This is not in any particular order. It's just there's no suggestion of magnitude in other words.
Okay, great. Thank you.
This slide illustrates the regulatory mechanisms that are proposed to implement the TMDL, existing water board permits, the human fecal material waste discharge prohibition, the domestic animal waste discharge prohibition, and existing state law and county ordinances.
May I ask a question on, if you could go back? Yeah. The discharge prohibition on human fecal matter and domestic animal waste, is that in the basin plan? Where is that prohibition established?
These prohibitions were adopted by the regional board in March 2009 for the Pajaro River watershed. So it's probably worth reemphasizing that we are recommending that the board add the Lower Salinas River watershed to those two existing waste discharge prohibitions.
And those waste discharge prohibitions that were established for the Pajaro watershed, what are those attached to? Are they part of the basin plan, or are those part of the TMDL for that watershed, or what is?
They are adopted and in the basin plan.
In the basin plan.
Yes.
Okay. So if someone wanted to understand what the conditions, the specific conditions associated with those prohibitions, they would go to the basin plan to find the language for that.
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
I have a follow-up question on that. Whether we put that in the TMDL, those two items in the TMDL or not, aren't they still prohibited per the basin plan? I mean, I think it's good to have them in there if that's what we want, but isn't that still a prohibition with or without the TMDL?
Well, with regard to the domestic animal waste discharge prohibition, there is no formal regulatory program pertaining to non-point sources associated with domestic animal waste discharges. So the establishing of the prohibition was essentially a way to establish a formal regulatory approach to addressing that. With regard to the human fecal material discharge prohibition, indeed, with regard to things like spills and leaks from sanitary sewer systems, they are regulated under WDRs, and through those WDRs they will demonstrate compliance with this prohibition. But again, there's some issues with non-point sources that aren't, where there's no formal regulatory mechanism for that.
Okay, great. Thank you. That clears up a lot. Thanks.
All right. You know, you would think common sense says, gee, it's already prohibited.
Yeah.
But as Pete says, there's nothing specific for it other than, I guess you'd fall back on it. It'd be discharging without a permit. So it would be a violation of the Clean Water Act.
Thanks.
And Pete, or Chris, you had an amplification.
Yeah, can you hear me okay? I just wanted to address Ms. Hunter's question real quick regarding, are the requirements for compliance with the prohibition in the basin plan? Really, the answer is no.
Wow.
Unequivocally. essentially, what the current prohibition says is that animal waste can't be discharged to the extent that it exceeds water quality objectives. You know, so really, is it already in the basin plan? Yeah, it really is. I mean, insofar as you can't discharge to the extent that you exceed water quality objectives, but the requirements have to be worked out later. The actual requirements and the monitoring requirements and the reporting requirements and so on. Just like we do with all of our TMDLs, if you were to look at our implementation table, you would see like 16 or so groups of responsible parties, and those are groups. And then within each one of those groups, of course, then there are individuals, and each one of the requirements have to be worked out. Yeah.
This slide illustrates the entities that will implement the TMDL: the City of Salinas, the county, owners and operators of lands with domestic animals, of lands with homeless encampments, or lands used for or containing illegal dumping, and Castroville Community Services District. Now, you may recall from the March board meeting that we did receive a significant number of written public comments for the March board meeting. This slide recaps the individuals and entities that did submit written comments for the March board meeting. There were 59 public comments from 15 different individuals and entities. The comments and staff responses are contained in attachment 6 to the staff report. We addressed each comment and indicated if or how we changed the draft documentation based on those comments. Now, finally, staff do recommend adoption of the proposed resolution, which includes proposed minor changes, which were first presented at the March board meeting, as shown in attachment 8, and non-substantive changes made since the March board meeting, which are summarized in attachment 7. This resolution has 3 proposed amendments to the basin plan, which include total maximum daily loads for fecal coliform, adding the watershed to the existing domestic animal waste discharge prohibition, and adding the watershed to the existing human fecal material discharge prohibition. And again, it is worth reemphasizing that we are recommending that the board add the watershed to 2 existing waste discharge prohibitions. Now, adoption of these basin plan amendments has the potential to address a significant water quality impairment in multiple stream reaches in one of the Central Coast region's most bacteria-impaired watersheds. As such, the amendments will also move the Water Board closer to achieving our Region 3 vision of healthy, functioning watersheds by 2025, which is only 15 years from now. And that concludes the presentation, and Chris and I will be happy to answer any questions the board has.
Pete, could you go back to one of the first slides, one that Mr. Shallcross commented on about the order of
the regulatory mechanisms?
No. Prior to that, I think. Yeah, what was that one?
The source categories.
Yeah, as part of the TMDL process, did you not try to document percentage contributions from each of these sources?
Indeed, we did quantify the magnitude of loading from each source category at the sub watershed scale. This slide, it doesn't have them in any particular order, and indeed, the magnitude of each of those sources varies spatially, by sub watershed. So, and yes, the answer is yes, we did quantify the magnitude of loading from these source categories.
Do you have any graphic representations of how that looks?
We do in the project report.
Can I shuffle that? Can show us right now?
It shows the magnitude, right. Maybe for an example,
any
watershed.
Any graphs?
Well, first of all, just in terms of the overall magnitude of loading, independent of discrete source categories, Chris suggested I show you this. This is a graph, a box and whiskers plot of the monitoring sites in the project area. Now, the horizontal axis represents discrete monitoring sites, and the vertical axis represents increasing fecal coliform concentration. Now, what the Box and Whiskers plots represents is a representative range of all the data from that particular monitoring site. The 50th percentile or the median is shown by that middle line, and the 90th and 10th percentile are shown by the ends of the whisker. So it represents a range of all the monitoring data from the site, excluding the extreme high-end and low-end outliers. Now, I'm going to superimpose on this graph the water quality objectives for fecal coliform, the 400 bacterial counts objective, and the 200 bacterial counts objective. And visually, as you can see, the exceedances are sustained, widespread, and significant on this slide. And now I'm going to pull up from the project report some graphs that show the magnitude from each discrete source category. Also, I should note that in the staff report, there is, and in the attachment one, the resolution, there is narrative descriptions of the magnitude of source categories by sub-watershed. But this graphically illustrates that. We did a source analysis for individual sub-watersheds in the project area because it's useful to be able to determine the spatial variation and distribution of bacteria loading at subwatershed scales.
Okay, so what this indicates to me is that domestic animal waste is a major source of fecal coliform bacteria for this TMDL.
Can you read off what those different colors mean?
Okay,
I'm not sure everyone can read those.
Yeah, the salmon, sort of salmon-colored one, is background, wildlife. Can you read that, Chris? The sort of dark, what would you call it, dark purple,
yeah,
is
purple.
Domestic animals.
Yes.
The blue is urban stormwater.
Mm-hmm.
The yellow is runoff associated with domestic animal waste. And the light blue is background runoff. And there are some other categories in there that are pretty negligible, like homeless encampments, but because they involve human fecal material, which is a higher pathogenic risk, we included those as source categories.
And Mr. Young is correct in that sort of purple color. That is domestic animals, and as you can see in the major sub-watersheds, that's the leading source.
Now, those are primarily rural sub-watersheds. When you get to the sub-watersheds that are associated with urban areas like the city of Salinas, the MS4 runoff, the stormwater, becomes a very big source, like for the reclamation canal, a huge source.
Dr. Hunter.
Thank you. If you could comment on where grazing fits into this picture. I noted in the list of non-substantive changes, the median costs were calculated, and one of the examples given was cost for grazing animals and land management, but it's not listed as a source in your report today. And so can you help me understand where it fits into the picture?
Okay, where grazing lands fits into the picture? The source category, the thing to understand or emphasize is that the source category, domestic animals, broadly applies to livestock that are associated with grazing operations. It applies to farm animals associated with, you know, smaller farmsteads or ranchettes. It applies to domestic pets. Basically, any type of domestic animal waste discharge that occurs outside of an MS4 entity, which would be considered a non-point source. So in that sense, that's how the domestic animal waste discharge prohibition would apply to grazing land, because it's associated with the livestock operations associated with grazing operations.
So can you describe for us how staff will implement the portions of the TMDL that apply to non-permitted entities like ranchers or, you know, homeowners with pets and things of that nature.
Yes. As indicated in the attachment one, the resolution, we have some conceptual conceptual implementation plan of monitoring and reporting requirements, and of various requirements that owners and operators can use to demonstrate compliance with the prohibitions. As far as specific implementation actions, we, the Water Board staff, cannot require or mandate specific implementation actions. Our role is one of oversight. We're going to work with the responsible parties to develop specific reporting requirements and ways that they can report to us so that we can determine that they are in compliance with the prohibition and the state's non-point source policy. So there are no specific reporting requirements or dates. That's to be worked out in the future. And there's a pretty long time window between now and when any type of formal regulatory oversight is required to even begin. Based on the resolution and the implementation plan, formal regulatory site won't happen really until 2012 or perhaps even 2013 or 14, based on the implementation plan. So we're going to use that time window to work, and we've communicated to stakeholders that we're going to work with them to develop specific monitoring requirements that will satisfy our regulatory oversight requirements.
Okay, so maybe you can be a little more specific, Pete, in terms of an example would be, I'm a rancher, I got 500 acres, and I've got some cattle. There's no formal permit between me and the Water Board.
Right. So
how do you enter into this
regulation,
you know, this relationship? What is it that's going to happen?
You're
going to want them to do certain things, right, to comply with some BNPs. What's the paperwork that's going to go between you? What happens?
Right. You know, let me give this a stab here. This is something that we've been talking about not only with the board but also with stakeholders. I think it's important that we start out with saying, again, unequivocally, that the TMDL does not require fencing in all the riparian areas. That is not what the TMDL is saying. And so I just wanted to get that out there once again, because that is a concern that I think that a lot of the larger grazing operations have. So fencing is not part of this TMDL. It is not a requirement of this TMDL. A couple of years ago, we sent a letter to the IPL, to the Interested Parties List for cattlemen and other cattle people, and let them know that we were not going to be taking grazing regulations to the extent that it was going to be a region-wide approach of regulation, that based on the information that we have and the data that we have, it is just because you're engaged in grazing operations doesn't necessarily mean that it's causing water quality exceedance. So we're not taking a region-wide approach like some regions are taking. Rather, we're taking this on a case-by-case basis. And one way of looking at a case-by-case basis is that when we do a TMDL where we have found that that grazing is a source, then we address that source. So that is what we mean by case-by-case as opposed to a region-wide. We're not taking a region-wide approach where anybody who's engaged in this activity has to sign up. Rather, it's case-by-case. Now, we have several TMDLs that have been approved or are about to be approved, hopefully, in the northern part of the region. I think perhaps about five TMDLs. And that would be a good time, we think, to work out what those details are. And as those TMDLs were approved, the same questions were asked. What is the Water Board going to expect? And I think that, Mr. Young, you hit it on the head when you said, what about those sources that are not yet permitted? And we look at these sources of domestic animals as falling within MS4 areas or within stormwater areas and falling from without stormwater areas. And the ones that are falling from without stormwater areas, some of them are cattlemen. They're large landowners. They have they've been in the business for perhaps generations. And then also in that group of falling outside of the MS4 areas, you have these little ranchettes where you have people who have a few animals and really aren't plugged in to the cattlemen or other associations. And then you just have people who have pets. We were were working with the county of Monterey a couple of years ago, and they did a creek walk. And in that creek walk of 2 miles, in that 2 mile walk, they found, I think it was between 5 and 7 people who had animals, domestic animals, that were abutting streams, surface waters, where the manure was obviously being discharged into those surface waters. So we know that there's a lot of these little small operations too. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to figure out a system to address these categories, essentially. Now, with respect to the cattlemen, these are the people who by and large have been showing up to our meetings and who have been the most vocal. And frankly, it has been their desire that they are not sort of lumped in with the ranchettes and with the people who own pets and so on. So we're all for that, and so we would like them to help us define who they are. And from that, build a group, and within that group, build a system of demonstrating that they are meeting water quality objectives and that they are doing what they need to do in order to be good land stewards and to meet the water quality objectives and the requirements of these TMDLs. Now, one of the things that the non-point source policy allows us to do is it gives us some latitude to work with groups like the cattlemen. And we think that communication with the cattlemen and using the options that are presented in the non-point source policy, such as using third parties such as RCDs, that we can work out something that we think meets our needs and meets perhaps their concerns, in other words, cattlemen. So the way we see this going with the cattlemen specifically and perhaps larger landowners is that we will be working with a third party, hopefully the RCDs, and they have communicated to us that they want to do that, and that we can work out what those requirements will be. There will be monitoring requirements. We need to verify that the water quality objectives are being met, particularly for bacteria. And however, that said, we think that we can probably work out a monitoring system so that they are monitoring implementation, at least initially, during the beginning phases of TMDL implementation. In other words, show us what you are doing. Show us what you are doing to manage your property right, to manage your animals correctly, so that you are at least minimizing discharges of fecal indicator bacteria in the surface waters. So we think that we can start with that, and that would probably be more palatable than probably what they fear the most, shall I say. Another component that we would like to build into it is that we would like to build in sort of a risk-based approach, so that as we begin implementing and as we begin working out the requirements, that as we see that there are higher risk areas, for example, if we find consistent and high magnitude exceedances of water quality objectives, that we would want to be able to focus in on those areas. We want to be able to have the leeway to do that. Another approach that we would like to see is, again, when we are asking for reporting, it's important to us that we find out what they are doing, what sort of implementation actions, what sort of management measures they're taking. Because, frankly, when it comes to bacteria, a lot can happen in the watershed, and it can take a long time for that effect to have an effect on actual concentration in the water body. So we think that one way of showing success is demonstrating what they are doing and estimating the load reduction as a result of the management measures that they're taking. Finally, again, we want them to be part of this. We've asked them several times, and I think that they're willing to sit down at the table with us and work out something that meets our needs in order to show demonstration of achieving these TMDLs and being in compliance with a prohibition. And as well, hopefully, that's something that's, again, a bit palatable to them. And then finally, we are in the process of having RFPs, request for proposals. The 319H grant money for non-point source pollution control is currently underway, and one of the proposals that we are asking for is a group like the RCDs to come to us with a proposal of how they can help ranchers technically and from a standpoint of reporting demonstrate compliance with these TMDLs. So we have sort of like the network in place to move forward, and hopefully we'll have the financing to move forward too.
Okay.
But just a second, can you just say what an OCD and an RCD are?
I'm sorry?
Not everyone may know what an OCD and an RCD are. Yeah. Can you just say what those are?
An RCD is a resource conservation district, and an OCD is a, what is an OCD?
Obsessive compulsive disorder.
That's what happens when I get in front of a microphone.
Okay.
Not that I have that.
Okay.
All right.
What? I appreciate all that information. And I think you probably answered this question, but I just want to focus on this a little bit more. It doesn't sound like there's a mechanism for issuing a non-point source permit to a landowner.
Not an individual permit, no. Not an individual permit.
All right. And so how are you going to do this with landowners? How are you going to formally establish this relationship and the Water Board's expectations for compliance?
The non-point source policy states that a landowner, such as grazing operations, can formulate a non-source pollution control program or plan, essentially. What we're hoping, frankly, is that ranch plans, which many of these ranchers already have, that we can piggyback on those ranch plans and use that as a starting point, and then perhaps add a little bit of information, required information, to those ranch plans, such as monitoring and reporting, and then use those. So I would say, if I had to answer it today, I would say augmented ranch plans.
Well, it sounds like staff is going to send a letter to a landowner requesting that they develop a plan.
Yes. Okay. Right.
That's kind of what I'm getting at. What's the paper trail here?
Okay. Yes. What we would like to do, essentially, is we would like to have ranchers, for lack of a better word, I'll use ranchers. We'd like to have ranchers come forward and begin the process. In other words, voluntarily come forward with their plans for once we build the requirements, once we have these conversations with Cattlemen and other technical groups about what the actual requirements are. We will use those third parties to disseminate that information.
Wait, Chris, do you have a list of the landowners?
We have a partial list.
Okay.
A partial list. Yeah.
Is there an effort being made to create a comprehensive list?
Not yet.
Okay.
Not yet. All right. That is really quite an undertaking because we are currently doing that for another DMDL.
Right. So it sounds like this is really a work in progress.
Big work in progress. Yeah, it's a lengthy implementation program.
Even identifying who's in it has been completed. You're just starting to.
This basically sets the framework for proceeding with the work.
Okay. Yes. If I could just piggyback on Chris, and to address your question about what's the paper trail and what's the mechanism, the resolution has a requirement that we do notify owners and operators of lands with a domestic animal. So there is a notification requirement in there. But as Chris said, we don't have currently a specific mechanism of how to do that. But there is a notification requirement, and that they have options to present a plan to us for their compliance, or they have an option to demonstrate that they are currently in compliance, or they can apply for WDR. So that's conceptually the nature of the implementation plan.
Dr. Hunter?
So just so I'm working hard here to understand.
Could you speak a little louder, Dr. Hunter?
Okay. Thank you for reminding me. All of this is hanging on the TMDL. So in other words, once the TMDL is issued, this is the source then of compliance. It says you must reduce or you are a landowner on a creek that has a TMDL. I know with a municipality and with government agencies, we can hold them to some kind of compliance to meeting goals for reducing those contaminants to reach the targets for the TMDL. Is that what we're talking about here? Landowners that you can identify will also be held to meeting the goals for the TMDL. Is that correct?
Yes, if I understand your question, that, you know, once the TMDL is approved, then do we have a mechanism essentially for saying this is what you have to do? Yes.
And that comes under the 303D process, or how? This is the first time I've considered how an individual landowner gets affected by a TMDL.
Right. Okay. Right. The requirement is built into the prohibition. The prohibition actually sets the requirement, and then it's up to us then to figure out a mechanism to develop a mechanism for them to demonstrate compliance with that requirement. Yeah.
If I could add one thing. Mr. Chair, it sounded like you were trying to get at the kind of the paper trail, but I initially thought you were asking about, you know, you're a rancher, what can you physically do? And while Chris said it's not a requirement to fence every mile of creek, and added that we can't tell them how to do it, but something that has been effective in other watersheds are some pretty simple things like providing watering troughs that are away from the creek, because if the only source of water to the cattle is the creek, guess where they're going to go? They're going to be in the creek. If they have another source of water, top of a hill or whatever, they're more likely to spend their time there, and my understanding is they tend to be kind of lazy about that. Same thing with salt licks. Salt licks, you know, placed away from the creeks are going to cause the cattle to gravitate towards salt licks and towards the watering troughs. And those, I'm not saying that's what they have to do, I'm just giving that as an example of something that has been effective and has shown improvement in water quality in other watersheds. I think Morro Bay is one that comes to mind.
Yeah, and my concern has not so much been with what people can do, because I think that's pretty easy and well known. I'm concerned about how staff's going to identify who is the non-permitted public right now. We know about the municipalities, the counties, the stormwater permits, the other NPDES permits, but there's this whole gray area here, which I think seems to match up with your biggest source of fecal coliform bacteria.
Yeah,
that's my concern.
Right. I understand what you're saying. Where's the paper trail? What is the mechanism? How we don't have a program in place.
Yeah, okay.
And we have to develop a program. We do.
All right. That's kind of what I wanted to hear a little bit.
And we have a staff member, as I understand it, currently working on developing program.
Right. So this is something that we are undertaking this year. It's in our work plan. You know, we know we have to do this. Like I said, we have, you know, four or five TMDLs where livestock are identified as a source. And this is something that we are working on this year.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mr. Shawcross had a question.
Yeah. I'm a little confused on to where the third-party entities come in. For instance, the county, what's their role in this? I mean, you have us, the regulating board, and then you have the discharger who's out there doing something, and then you have this list of folks up there. There was a community services district and the county and the city of Salinas. And what's their role in this?